This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, October 14th, 2009.
Okay, we'll get started. And are there any late additions to the agenda? Seeing none? Oops.
The ad hoc committee resolution.
Okay. Marty?
Depending on whether it comes up as a part of the discussion in agenda item 4. But if it does, then it's not necessary. I want to talk about the process of communicating resolutions to the president.
Okay. And I'm going to forego the approval of minutes, so hopefully we'll have a quorum at that point. And first up is a presentation on the Middle State accreditation process from Paul Streeter.
Thank you.
I believe it's here.
So again, as I mentioned, this is a once every 10-year process that involves
really two phases. One's an in-depth institutional self-study report, and that's what we're in the midst of right now. When that's completed, there was actually a site visit from an external review team. Through this self-study process, and through the external review team, we must demonstrate that we meet compliance with 14 different standards put forth by Middle States. And I'll show you those in just a second. But that's what we're through in this process. This external review team, which typically would be chaired by a president or a provost from some other institution, and there'll be, I don't know if it's three or four, it's a relatively small group of external review team members, but they will come here to campus, they will look at reams of documentation, meet with a lot of people to make the assessment to see if we actually do comply with these 14 standards. So it's a set of their ability to report to the campus, and they in turn will make a recommendation to Middle States as to whether we are accredited or not accredited. Next slide. So from our process standpoint, we do have a steering committee established. I'll show you the membership in just a second. We've broken down our self-study process into six topical areas. We have six working groups very actively engaged at the moment on this. And our objective through this process is, again, to show that we demonstrate that we meet these 14 standards. The final report will be a very lengthy report. Last time it was a couple hundred pages in length. Our theme for the report, to try to have some kind of coordinating theme of what it is we're trying to do through this process. This is a real opportunity for the institution to take a look at itself. The theme we chose is any person, any study within one university. So trying to recognize the richness of our diversity, but also that we operate within one university. So that is the kind of coordinating theme for this review. And as we said, our student middle state is in 2011. Next slide. So the accreditation steering committee, you can see the members there, I'll pause. Kent is co-chair along with Ellen Matthews, the Dean of Human Ecology. You can see the broad representation there, including the Wild Natural College. So next slide, please. As I mentioned, we've got six working groups going, according into the steering committee. And as you see there, we've grouped some standards under each of these working groups. And I'll define the standards again in just a second. But I want you to get a sense of what the overall structure of this is. Some standards naturally combine student stewardship and put four together, for example, the one on the faculty is one that really warrants the standalone working group. So, and I will again show you the membership of each of these groups. Next question. So, to that first one, the Institutional Stewardship Working Group, there are four of the 14 standards we lumped under this particular working group. And again, you can see the membership there of the working group. But let me just describe each of these standards. The first standard from a middle state is one around mission, goals, and objectives. And what they really want to know is whether we have, as an institution, that our mission is clearly defined, that our mission clearly defines what our purpose is. The standard around planning, resource allocation, and institutional renewal is a standard that really wants to test and determine whether, as an institution, we conduct ongoing planning and make resource allocation decisions that are based on our mission. We really behave in accordance with our mission in our planning and distribution of resources. The third round institutional resources test just to make sure that we do have resources necessary to achieve our institutional mission and goals accordingly. So again, what Middle States wants to understand, do we know what it is we want to be? Do we have planning processes and resources in place to help us achieve that? And are we constantly evaluating? And lastly, is that the point on the evaluation, the institutional assessment, that we do have an assessment plan and process that on a regular basis evaluates the institution's overall effectiveness. So that's the working group, there is a group, as you see the membership, working against those four standards and trying to document, understand, evaluate as a self-study whether we actually comply with those or not. Next slide, please. Again, stop me if you have questions. next working group is around integrity, governance, and administration. And Charlie Volkow, one of the group members, actually chairs this working group. Charlie, chime in here if I fall short of what you'd like commented on, but let me just describe those three standards that fall under this group. First is around leadership and governance, and this is really looking at the institution systems of governance and whether that clearly defines the goals in policy development and decision making within the institution. So to look at our governance structure and the policies and goals that has within our decision making. Second is our administration, and that's looking at the institution's administrative structure and services to see if it facilitates learning, scholarship, and support of our organization and governance. So looking at our administrative structures and processes. And lastly, around integrity, that the institution demonstrates an adherence to ethical standards in all that we do. So this working group is, again, focused on those three standards.
Are there any undergrads that are members of these groups?
Yes.
Yes, there are. I think you're going to see that in the next one.
The Kilcomar is one of the technical
students. So again, the third working group around student admissions and support. First is just around our student admission processes. Are we admitting students who grew up in our mission? And around student support services, do we provide services that enable students to achieve the goals we set for them? I don't know all the total. I haven't added it up, but I think it's a really impressive number of folks across all these committees that are actually involved in this at the moment. I don't know if they have
a number. No, I haven't made the count, but it is a large group.
So the next standard, please. Next one is looking at the faculty, whether our institution's programs provide, develop, monitor, and support by qualified professionals. It's really assessing the quality of our faculty and the support of faculty. And again, you can see the partnership around this. Next one, please. Next is around educational offerings, taking a look at what are our academic programs. And first, again, three different standards here. The first is one called educational offerings. And it's making sure that our educational offerings display academic content, rigor, and coherence. It makes sense. The general education standard is looking at our curricula, so well designed so that students acquire and demonstrate college level proficiency in general education. And finally, the related educational activity standard is looking at our programs and our activities to see what we actually do meet these standards. They start to overlap. If you look at behind these are a set of discussion questions, probably the number 15 to 20 for each working group, a set of questions that they are asking to meet these standards. We didn't share that level of detail here, but you guys understand the process is quite detailed in nature.
Okay.
Yes, Stephen.
How do you define general education, and what do the participants in this panel evaluate or construct in their argument about our ability to general education?
Well, I think, it applies in many cases to the foundational educational content that we offer in our graduates.
Meaning, what's the foundation?
Yeah.
What is the foundation?
Well, the courses that I guess would provide breadth to an undergraduate education, right? The one-on-one getting we have professional schools and so forth. And I think they want to make sure that our undergraduates are educated beyond their disciplinary and professional studies.
So what I wonder about this is the panel that's looking at this doesn't appear to be distributed in the faculty area and in the previous one as well in ways that represent the size of the university, the size of respective colleges. You seem to be representing many colleges in Canada by one individual as opposed to to looking at, I guess you could say. I mean, if you want to.
So you
want to
have a proportional.
Proportional of the
more than that, you want a house model?
Yeah, I think it's more than that. And also, I was thinking in the case of this, if you're looking at general education, one could consider the art colleges having a more general education kind of bias on, you know, or at least mission.
Yeah, and I suppose that's why Laura Brown may have been
chair. But then, of course, there's nobody else. But unless you have to follow some law. Okay. That's
the thing. But we'll bring all the data back to Laura so that she can take that into consideration. Maybe she wants to add another thing.
The last standard, is around effective student learning. And this is one that is probably one of our most challenging standards in this mix. What Middle State is looking for in this is a demonstration that the institution's students have knowledge, skills, and competencies consistent with the goals, and the students are at graduation have achieved the appropriate higher education goals. So this gets at the issue of what are our goals, and it asks us as an institution, are they well defined? How do we define them? How do we communicate them? And how do we measure and assess, you know, progress against those? A large group of folks look at this. They have spent a lot of time on this, just even understanding what is the Middle State standard. What does it mean, and how do we bring that into an institution such as Cornell? So they've made a lot of progress, I think, of just trying to understand what Middle State is looking for, and they're quite actively involved in this. But I expect this to be one of the standards that probably will be, you know, most actively discussed broadly on campus over this next year.
And there is an expectation that we will have a developing, if not fully developed, university-wide assessment of student outcomes structure, so that our courses will benefit from assessment that will be fed back into the courses to improve them. This is something that's developed over the last 20 years, and now Middle States has decided to really press the point. So we and other large universities who have thought otherwise are now having to reconsider how we approach assessment.
Could you explain to me in Middle States are
Middle State is a consortium of member institutions. But there's a body of folks that set standards. The federal government looks to these bodies to actually provide the governance over the quality and the rigidity of academic program, the rigor of the program, the quality of the program.
So you have to have peer institution, people from other institutions that are on this body to set
standards? Yes, largely. If a member institution, you know, folks coming out of the member,
I always worry about who judges the judge.
Right. There's actually tension in that right now between the federal government and these bodies of accreditation throughout the country. There is actually a lot of tension in that right now. Middle State and its organizations around the country are really trying to retain control of that, and not that the federal government actually.
And what are the chances that Cornell will not get accredited?
Well, we'd like to think they're very slight, but accreditation is probably the nub of our challenge.
Well, what happened from the assessment 10 years ago? Was there like recommendations, and did Cornell meet those recommendations?
Well, yeah, after 5 years following the reaccreditation process, they do have an interim arrangement whereby you report back progress on what your goals were. So, and they don't look back more than 5 years. So what happened 10 years ago is not really relevant.
Well, 5 years ago then, can you give an example of one thing where they said, Cornell, you need to improve or do something?
So I can comment a little bit. I don't think it's satisfying. This assessment standard, if it existed 10 years, was by no means at the explicitness that it is now. The standard has just been raised tremendously.
So, or 5 years ago.
And even 5 years ago, the point that we did was a periodic review report 5 years ago, this standard was expressed as it's expressed now, but it really was just, you know, it's probably about 2 years old at that point in terms of those states really trying to promote it, and I think they were getting their legs under them in terms of what it means and how our institutions are responding. So at the time that we did our periodic review report, we wrote a report that tried to actually do a compilation. Maybe that's the best that could be described. A compilation of activities, examples of activities around assessment that were going on around the institution. And we submitted that to middle states. And this is just my characterization of it. Others may have a different view. My view on it, they said, nice try, but it doesn't quite get to the 10-year. We're expecting you to have more rigor in your assessment process. And not just at the undergraduate, but at the graduate level. So they really are looking at this seriously. And what we got in the 5 year reply back to us was, not a dismissal, but really saying that our bar was a bit higher than what we were needing at that time.
And some universities put the standard of the challenge on what they do around this issue. They're not in our middle state consortium. Their regional consortium did take them to the task with regard to how they assess students.
So is assessment measured in terms of jobs? That is jobs the student get afterwards, or is it measured in terms of some kind of testing process?
It's actually measured against learning goals that each faculty member has for the courses.
I see. So you get a prestige and then you how do you assess that the students have done that?
Well, they do very concrete. That's the challenge, I think, and that's what David Reese and his team, along with associate deans who have gone to an assessment conference in those states sponsored, are trying to determine. So each of the colleges that's had a representative go to this meeting, and they're returning to take stock of what they currently do and what they will do in anticipation of the visit that will happen.
Yeah, I was just going to ask with the student learning assessment as well, because especially that this review also provides opportunity for good introspective, not just for the accreditation process, but where we as an institution are going, what we want to do, and so forth. I was wondering about how exactly we are measuring this student learning component that is such an integral part of the university. And specifically, I was wondering, this seems to be made up completely of faculty and administration. And I was wondering why aren't we reaching out to current students and alumni who they were the ones who took place in the same learning area students, and shouldn't, I think, they provide a vital perspective in this regard?
Well, each of these committees is supposed to consult very broadly. So all six of these groups will endeavor to reach out into the community and consult. This is just part of it, is what we're doing right now. And we are, the last slide we'll see is an invitation for you to conference with us around issues that are your concern to you. And we'll do our very best to respond to all of those concerns, questions, and suggestions.
Do they also, are these, some of these folks also alums?
I don't know that we have alums on this.
No, I think the folks you're seeing up there are staff and faculty.
And students.
A lot of few students. Very few students.
Are there plans to get any more undergraduate students involved in the process, either on the committees or other ways?
Currently, these committees have been formed in our board. They are free to consult with other groups. Graduate students, undergraduates, and other alumni.
Alums should be
doing that work.
A key part of this, I would think.
But, obviously, the committees are already quite large, generally speaking, and if you get a committee that's too large, it just can't get out of its own way.
It might be helpful if you could just look to the next slide for a second, just to get a sense of the timeline and what we're working under. This does have a fairly lengthy timeline. The first draft, we're in the box number one right now. These working groups have been charged, appointed, and they've been working since the spring, trying to, one, understand what questions they should be asking and developing their own self-study.
And the self-study plan was created and submitted mid-summer. The first thing we had to do was create a self-study plan. that had to be accepted by Middle States, which happened July 1st. So now we're operating with that self-study plan to move forward. The draft... So the work groups are currently working in various stages of completion. The final draft of the work group reports are due this spring. We expect to see preliminary drafts in between so we can continue to think about how they mesh. Because obviously we have all these six reports that have to finally emerge in one report that has a certain consistent tone, language, and so forth. It has prioritizes all the elements that are in the appropriate way. So we're going to start our work, I think, concurrent with the creation of these six reports. Now, in the fall of 2010, a year from right now, the steering committee intends to share its first draft of the self-study with the campus. So we'll be back here in a year to talk about the self-study in its specific form. And then after consulting with the community, we'll put together the final draft, which is submitted to Middle States in March of 2011, a year and a half. And then the evaluation team comes to campus in May of 2011, and with good luck, everything goes smoothly and we'll be accredited. Anticipate that 5 years hence, to have an interim review of what they have recommended, both in terms of what we do to improve, so it's able to play our strengths.
Is this just for Ithaca, or is this for the medical
college? Every site in the world.
Qatar.
Okay. So it's medical school, it's Qatar, it's Geneva, and all of
it. Is there any connection between the self-study and reimagining the world?
Well, we're working on that.
We are working on it. In the strategic planning process, we're trying to get overlap to the extent that makes sense, overlap in committee, overlap in... coordination and timing, sharing of information back and forth. So we are actively working. There's a challenge. This has a specific direction it needs to take and a specific timeline that it needs to take. But we're working awfully hard to bring those connections together.
The reason I bring it up is that we've been assured in several forums that reimagining Cornell does not involve any academic side at this point, only administrative, and that we're to take that direction of academic is going to these committees that are being advised from various colleges, and they're issuing reports, and so forth. And those reports pertain to the size of departments and various other things, and business departments. And I, when you talk about assessments, student assessments, and whether we're meeting our goals and so forth, I'm hoping that any kinds of intersection that would take place would be transparent and that would be fielded before they go into any kind of final document that goes to this stage. And in connection with that, I was wondering whether you could see if there's any intersection between what we consider our mission as a university, which you talked about in the early one, and this question of what constitutes a successful student experience here. And that's measured by assessments. In other words, what is our mission? And then is our mission literally translated into things that will be evaluated by student assessments, or is that another kind of process?
I might say, Ed Lawler, who's chairing the strategic planning effort, has met with us on the steering committee to try to coordinate this. Clearly, it will be very challenging, and they're moving very quickly. So we hope that we'll mesh in some appropriate way. But we may have to work hard, especially at the conclusion of their report, to make sure that what we do is consistent with what they're, what they've undertaken.
I think the way you state it is certainly the objective. Our mission should drive what it is we do and where it is we, how we assess ourselves. And that is really what I think Middle States is looking for. It's not so much as a pure point in time where they want to see a process, they want to see an institution that's actively reinventing itself, actively thinking about how students are using assessment, whether it be the institutional assessment piece or the student learning assessment piece, to again, constantly challenge ourselves and push ourselves to be delivering the best product.
Charlie, do you have a question? I know you
can answer well. No, I think it's irrelevant at this point. Friends are all. I just wanted to actually make one point that you may have said something actually, that sometimes assessments are worse than not having any assessments. So I hope the assessments actually make them better.
Some assessment is really no assessment at all. I mean, you can set up your learning goals that said meaningless. So.
But I want to suggest a possibly meaningful, but very silly kind of assessment. And that is on alumni weekends, give the alumni a chance, task for some of the. It wouldn't take too long. Come back and be together and maybe have some questions from basic courses that almost everybody's gone through. And then a few questions that what was good and what was bad. And they probably have the best perspective of anybody on the whole learning situation. And maybe they would welcome the chance to contribute to the learning. And of course, the people that come back have a bit more of a question.
We'll put together the exam.
You guys can have this together, okay.
That's right.
Any questions or comments? Again, there's contact information there, and you'll see more and more information as the year goes on, and you'll certainly see it next fall if you actually do have a formal report, which we'll be reviewing your community.
And my report is going to be assured that this is a transparent process. There's no questions. Okay.
Yeah, I have a question. Presentation a few times, and I'm wondering, is there a role that the assembly is playing in this, particularly in the governing session and the stability and evaluation of the campus governing systems that part of this?
Kathy Rasmussen is the person to be charged with this, and she should have been charged with it, but she had to.
Actually, it's our group, and one of the issues is essentially what level of participation is there in the community in the governance process. And so the UA and the various assemblies are a critical part of that, as is the faculty senate and so on. So, yes, there's a big section about that.
Right.
One of the things that's happening is, in addition to describing the way university governance works and interacts with the university administration, is to not just describe the rules and the charters, but to explain some things that have happened over the past 10 years where the UA, for example, has been actively involved.
Exactly. For example, the campus code of conduct will be surely one of the topics that will be discussed in the report, because it illustrates the role of the various assemblies and committees in doing something which is of critical importance to the university. And so it's that kind of involvement. We think that's more effective than just making general platitudes about what the UA does.
Does the university itself do its own internal assessment, regardless of Middle States or any other unit or organization? Does Cornell internally do its own assessment on an annual or every 2 or 3 years basis or something?
This is, everything's been in a more decentralized fraction. We have a whole office institutional research and planning
right.
Constantly working in this arena. Colleges have their own version of that, so different scales. So yes, we're looking at, someone had asked about graduation jobs, there's an armload of information out there that we are as an institution using regularly. I don't think we put our arms around it and thinking about it in the way that this kind of process gives us the chance to step back and reflect, is it complete and is it properly targeted? So I think this is a chance to kind of refresh on that, but I do think we're into it regularly. It's part of I think done again centrally and done at the human level, I think we're prior to this.
there any chance that we could get some of these PowerPoints?
You can have this one tonight.
Are they available online?
They should be on the web, but you know, well, for that copy.
I'm with the department chair.
And then are both are both of you available to come to unit to give the presentation?
Anything else? No, thanks so much for your time. What is the middle of the
book? What's the sleep power? It's a
geographical.
Yeah, the middle of the United States.
There's a website. The website seems to have all this accreditation process, so it can just stay on the board and change the presentation.
Do you see this specific presentation?
Yeah. I don't see this specific one, but I haven't looked at all this. There's a lot of stuff here. So, it's in, it's under
thank you. Okay. Let us move to. Do we have a quorum? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. We do have a quorum. Do we want to approve minutes real quick and then we'll lead into Beth's presentation? Anybody want to move the minutes from the last meeting? Wendy moves, seconded by Sylvia Zhang. Any corrections? Any adjustments? Take a vote. All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. It passes unanimously.
How safe.
Okay. Log in. Just click on the bottom here. Now we have Beth. Okay, good. And Beth has a few.
Three items.
That she would like to discuss.
So, I'm Beth McKinney, and I'm here as the chair. Of the Family Services Committee, and just for your edification, the Family Services Committee of the UA is charged to identify needs of non-academic staff, academic staff, graduate professional students, and undergraduate students with family responsibilities and to address issues related to work/study/life balance. And to study proposals brought by members of the university or the administration to meet those needs and to advise the assembly and vice president of human resources and other senior members. And so, as a little bit of background, the committee has been meeting regularly and has been developing its priorities and what it's going to work on and how it's going to help. And in addition to looking at some policies, like looking at the flight policy and figuring out how to promote that, and looking at the child care grant and seeing how to promote that, one of the priorities was to get the senior administration to be more engaged What is the idea of career-life balance? The word career-life balance is the word thing that is used now, which encompasses staff and faculty and students. So it's a very broad way of saying career-life balance or student-life balance. And so, with that in mind, I want to introduce this, and I had a group last night writing on the Where At It, writing a document to see if the University Assembly will approve having President Skorton make a statement related to career-life balance. Right now, there is an existing vision, which is on, right now, it resides on the Human Resources webpage, and that statement was very, I'd say it was more, wellness related. This is a much broader statement, and we thought it would be a good idea to revise that statement, update it for the times now. And if you don't mind, if I can read it to you, then you'll get the gist of it. In addition to the document, at the end of the document, I wrote the old one, so you can see what the old one looks like. But this one is a little bit more forceful. As Cornell's president, and this is a suggestion that we would like you to make a statement like this. As Cornell's president, I value a healthy work-life balance and encourage all members of the campus community to engage in activities that promote good mental and physical health as well as career-life balance. Together with my senior staff, I am committed to this vision. Recognizing that the work environment for faculty and staff is changing, now is a critical time to focus on the health and well-being of our community. As educators of the next generation, we must lead by example. My expectation is that all deans, chairs, and supervisors will familiarize themselves with the advocates of Cornell policy programs and services that contribute to a positive fit between career and life. Examples of some of our policies include tenure clock stop or flexible work arrangements. Programs/services include alternative transportation options or taking classes at Cornell. Deans, chairs, and supervisors should also engage in and be open to discussions with faculty and staff that relate to career-life fit. Cornell's leadership seeks equitable implementation of these policies as we sustain our reputation as the employer of choice for the best faculty and staff. Questions? Comments? Yes.
I have a comment, but I wish I had a positive thing to add with this comment.
Okay.
One of our President Rhodes' last graduation speeches, he stood in front of the students and parents and said, when you leave, I hope you don't get a job. And I hope you don't get a career. I hope you find your calling. And so I wish I had something to offer besides career life.
Yeah, I had a similar feeling about this work versus life, and career versus life approach, and I don't know how to get around to doing that in the statement, but I know that it's in President Skorton's previous announcement where he talked about the value of a healthy work-life balance. It's like the balance between your work and your life outside of the work. And I'm just wondering whether we're not talking about a healthy work environment or a healthy experiencing of work as an integral part of life, of your life.
Yeah, we, believe me, wordsmiths over this with a slightly smaller group than this group and had these very same debates. And what we decided was that we would leave it like this because the president, if he were to get something out of this, we'd probably rewrite it anyway.
Did you mean to add this to the replace the last paragraph with this statement, or do you mean to replace the entire statement with
the other one? Yeah, just replace, just cross this all out, and just update it.
I don't want to sound too critical, because I think this is something good that to encourage the work-life balance is, this is something that is healthy for the university. But there's a little bit of language that I find troubling. And it says that the expectation is that all deans, chairs, and supervisors will familiarize themselves and be advocates of Cornell's policies. I feel like that language is troubling in the sense that it's almost coerced. It's saying, well, you have to agree with what we say. And that there could be faculties who could say, this doesn't go far enough. I want to even more work like that, where they say, oh, well, this creates problems in my department in here. To say that you are expected to advocate Cornell's policies, where without meaning, that you're expected, if you want Cornell to change something, you shouldn't write a letter to the editor of this song saying Cornell needs to change this policy. You would be violating the mission. It raises some problems in that regard, and I find that troubling.
That's a great observation. And it never occurred to me. What did occur to me was that there are some supervisors that don't advocate policies and that live in a different, you know, era.
They certainly need to abide by Cornell's policy. No one's questioning that, but I feel not that they need to be advocates of Cornell's policy. I feel like that could have almost a chilling effect on further changes and progression of Cornell policy.
One of the things that Vice President Opperman has said about things like mandating certain things. So policies are mandated. Guidelines are not mandated. But if she were ever going to mandate something, and I guess the word advocate almost sounds like it means mandate, she would want to make sure that everybody would do it. And so I get your point. And I think changing the word to abide would work if that solves the problem. Yeah, because also what I'm saying is to you as a supervisor is, you are following policies.
As a department chair, I thought it was really important.
Yeah.
And I think most chairs do. Because we don't know the policy.
So,
familiarize themselves with and abide by.
Yeah.
So that you then see them saying the partnership to make them aware.
You do know it. Knowing what the president would do if he were given this, you know, he would look at this and you know, in his words in here. That it would be really important right now because at least I can speak for the staff at Cornell. People are under a lot of pressure right now, and no one's thinking about their work-life balance. They're all thinking about keeping their jobs. And I think now may or may not be the right time for this, but there may never be a right time for this. And so this is something that hasn't been on the back burner. We've been trying to push this along and would love to push it along to the University of Sedona.
Yeah, as a member of the University of Sedona, I agree with everything you just said.
So would you take it as a friendly amendment to change advocates or to familiarize themselves with it and abide by it?
Yes.
Can we call the question?
Okay.
I'm sorry. So the balance is different for everybody. So there's a personal balance that's probably the most important.
It's not an equal balance.
That's right.
Personal.
Yeah, I mean, each person has a different personal balance. And you want that personal balance. You want each person to work at their personal balance about what's best then. And at the same time be consistent with the institution's expectations of the job getting done. And I'm also wondering if there could be some wording that says that we like each person to have their starting their own personal balance. But there's some expectation too that a job will be done. seems to me it's there, Randy. If you look down here at the bottom, it says deans, chairs, and supervisors should also engage in and be open to discussions with faculty and staff that relate to career life step. Isn't that what you were really talking about? That suggests that there might be flexibility within the guidelines, of course.
Yeah, it does, but it doesn't make it up here at the top where I'm thinking about saying, that sentence could equally be read as, okay, you're spending a little too much time with your family, maybe we should discuss whether you should have this job or not. And I'd rather move the personal fit closer to the top.
So, what about this? As Pronouns President, I value a healthy work-life balance and encourage all members of the campus community to, and that's where you can put something about strive for their own personal balance and engage in activities that promote good mental health.
Like I said, I'm taking up a career now.
So did that say,
what
did I say?
Help. To the campus community for their own to strive for their own personal balance and to engage in activities to promote good mental and physical health. Is that what you're about?
No, period.
Period. Is that what you're working for?
Yeah.
Anything
on the idea behind this is that in careers, whether it's a career as a student or a worker or whatever, the times are changing right now, and workplaces have to become more flexible in order to retain the best people to come there, whether it be a student, whether it be a faculty member, and the responsibility, the shifts in thinking that we're trying to push along, and hopefully a statement like this would help push it along in addition to some grassroots efforts and some middle management efforts, et cetera.
So how is it going to read now?
As Cornell's president, I value a healthy work-life balance and encourage all members of the campus community to strive for their own personal balance and engage in activities that promote good mental and physical health. Mm-hmm. Period. Together with my senior staff almost.
I like that. I think it's work-life balance makes sense.
I'd like to move this resolution.
Second.
Moved by Marty, seconded by Leon. Ready to vote? All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. The vote's unanimous.
I have a question. It's regarding Marty's comment at the last topic, which is, how does this get to the president?
Well, that was just for me to discuss that part.
Okay.
It normally would be going to a resolution in which one of the executives came down and who's given that duty will formulate and immediately pass on within a day or two.
I will retype this and I'll send it to Robbie.
Yes, sir.
I'll tell you. That's certainly my. I won't say anymore.
Okay, two more items, and these come up through the Family Service Committee from the Child Care Committee, which is the subcommittee, and they are charged with identifying the needs of the university community concerning child care services. That's what their big focus is on. And they have sent out two statements. One that I introduced at the last meeting, and then one that is new. The one that I introduced at the last meeting is called the Child Care Affordability and Accessibility for Cornell Employees and Students. And basically, the Child Care Subcommittee feels there are existing inequities related to access to child care among the various Cornell constituencies. And so, for example, if you are a student and have no income, or you are a worker who's on the lower end of the pay scale, it's a higher percentage of your salary that has to go towards child care. And this recommendation looks at what it would take for us to, I think they suggested, 15% of one's income at the most be the amount that they should spend on child care. And so they have a bunch of statistics and information in the beginning of this document, and then some recommendations at the end. Whether or not these recommendations are even possible with the way that the child care center at Cornell is set up and with all the financial constraints that we have, we don't know. So these aren't demands, but they're recommendations that if possible, and you can see that, that the Board of Trustees developed a sustainable plan to access high-quality child care for families of Cornell students, staff, and faculty, including child care grants and additional family and child care programs. So they're just saying it should be a high priority for the university.
I'm worried about addressing it to the Board of Trustees. It seems to me that, that this is an administrative matter, and yes, the Board of Trustees may have to find the money, but I think it's a tactical mistake to address it to the Board of Trustees.
And I don't disagree with you. There's a sense of ignorance, even though I am a trustee, with how some of these things should come up. And this is the way it came up from the Child Care Committee, and they were so gung-ho because they're really dedicated to this. And believe me, they worked very hard on these documents. And, you know, a group of students, graduate students, you know, as a whole constituency, and they were ready to hand this off to the Board of Trustees, even though they didn't know it might not be the most appropriate. So I'm open to making that change if the UA feels like that's not the case.
Yeah.
And it just to say the committee recommends that the administration.
Right.
I don't think they would be upset about that. I think they would love for this document to be seen and circulated as a UA resolution.
That's in the recommendation, she said? That's in the recommendation section?
Yes, in the recommendation section. The university administration should agree to strive to provide support so that child care expenses are no more than 15% of household income.
So you're changing the committee recommends that the Board of Trustees, you're just saying that the administration.
Mm-hmm.
The university administration.
Okay. And to be honest, this did get circulated prematurely because it's been around, and when I became the chair, I decided it really should move up through the proper channel. So a few people have already seen this, and have given their blessing and said that, yes, we agree. I don't know if we can do it, but we agree.
By a few people, do you mean members of the board? Or
No, not the board. The people to whom this is addressed.
Okay.
By Ken Hubbell. He got this email. And he replied. He said, thank you.
We don't have an address online.
I don't mean that.
In the beginning, it says addressee, rather than Ken Hubbell.
The university has the university presidents, dean of students.
Oh, you're saying the document. I'm sorry. Yes, I see.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
And because of that, there are already discussions going on about things like the child care grant and how it is proportionally distributed. And the child care grant for graduate and graduate students is now under the sanctioning body, and so they should be seeing something like this just to give them some direction.
I'd like to move this resolution.
Second.
Moved by Marty, seconded by Leanne.
One small point in third whereas, fourth whereas, board committee, UCC.
Where's that, Marty?
Fourth sentence of the board of directors.
This one.
A fourth line.
I see it.
I'd like to recommend that we clarify the table three and four. Some of the things are not meeting the values. If the proportion cost cap for the board, I'm not sure that that's the answer.
Difference in proportion in the proportional cost after award.
Because you take over at home, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7. That's just such.
Right, from
you
home.
You did that calculation, but apparently you should try to make it a little bit more clear.
Maybe you need a footnote to say what the proportion cost on the county board or the proportion cost on the national board.
I can answer that.
Or just move over this column just for that job. Take a small resolution for figuring that out.
Can be a very long time.
You know, and then you lose all the numbers and then don't try to put that here. So are you allowed to approve this knowing this is what will be added?
I think so.
Sure.
So put note described in the last column or a better explanation in the little
box. No, I'm just doing clarification. So I need to do a little bit more clarification. So that some administrators have made it, you know, you almost immediately what it all means. There's a little while to figure it out.
Okay.
Right.
Any other comments? Ready to vote? All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. That's unanimous.
Thank you.
And thank the committee for working on this matter in particular, but
in the future, Bernita is going to attend a family services committee that will be able to give you quick updates on what we're working on.
Really important committee that we
haven't
done
the
second
resolution.
Yeah, I was
going to
say thank you.
Oh, sorry. Okay, the second resolution is, and I'll try and describe this as the best I can without sounding biased one way or the other. The Child Care Subcommittee discussed the use of computers, and this happened actually a while ago. But they discussed the use of computers at the Cornell Child Care Center. And there was great debate over whether or not the little kids, the three-year-olds, should be using computers. And they had all kinds of experts weigh in on it. And they did not come to any consensus. And so basically the Child Care Center does have computers that children can use to do some learning programs. And it might be 2 or 3 minutes at a time or something like that. And I think what this document is suggesting is that parents be allowed to opt out if they don't want their children to use computers. And so we, the Family Services Committee, looked through it and also made a few adjustments. So the gist of it is, use of computers and other forms of media. The recommendations that I believe have already been shared with the Child Care Center are that the center should make certain that all staff members know the computer policy, that people, that parents can opt their children out, that children should only be allowed supervised and limited use, which they say they do anyway. They wouldn't let a child have a computer or have another child standing over, you know, like you do with your friend, watching them on the computer. Parents should be able to opt their children out. And I already mentioned the standing over the shoulder. And that parents should be aware of the policy. And then we added that the committee will compile feedback about how the computers are being used. During spring semester 2010.
Any questions?
Can you give us a summary of the arguments against, or let's put it this way, the problems with possible abuse or whatever that might have led to?
I can give you the quick summary.
Yeah.
There are some people that think it's perfectly fine for kids to be using computers during their school day, and these are preschool children, but a lot of child learning experts say it's totally not necessary. They can get enough of that when they get older, and the kind of learning that they need to be doing, they can do without the use of computers.
Well, I guess I meant in with respect to what's going on with computers in the center.
I have no idea. I'm a messenger in terms of this, so I can't, I just don't know.
You don't know whether computers are being pushed as one of the important ways to engage in child or engaging in early ages, that kind of thing?
I do not. But I can tell you that Right Horizons share that computers are only available to children in the pre-K classroom, to the 6-month-old age. And Stride Horizons implemented the computers in preschool home bases training for all current and future teachers. So they're educating the teachers on whatever their use of computer policy is.
Okay.
It seems to me that this is meddling in a way in Bright Horizons and the details of the curriculum. And somehow to send this to the president of the university suggesting that he make a dictum, it doesn't strike me as the right way to go. And it seems to me that there must be another route that this kind of information and kind of opinion from the committee can be fed back, rather than going through this cumbersome, elaborate route of getting the university's highest administration to worry about computers in the classroom.
Before these committees were made, subcommittees and committees of the university and faculty, a lot of both of these advised human resources and advised W. Delk and Lynette Chappell-Williams, who was in charge of the child care building. And then they got put under the UA. And so if they can take a non-circuitous route and go directly to I guess it's WEDI, the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion, that still has some oversight over Bright Horizons and then to Bright Horizons, I think that's fine. But I don't want to do that without the blessing of the University Assembly, since there are subcommittees on.
Yeah, and I remember the dynamics and the involvement of making this committee a part of the UA. We were approached by Mary Hopkins because the view was that and the actions that were being taken, specifically the child care center, but then these other things that have come along since then, should be actions of the university as a whole in the way of representing this as a whole. So I agree with Charlie that there's have to be a way of us not having to send the president. On the other hand, I think it's really a great idea that it is coming to us to be aware of, because it's just what. So I guess what we're doing here is we're asked to agree that it is a matter of concern that computers, should be. We should know just how much computers are being used in the early years of kids at a facility that is a university. It's a facility in which we all have some stake as UA members. I guess what we could do is just reframe the resolution in a way that it says that the UA has considered this resolution, considered this issue, and finds it's a matter of concern that we encourage the Family and Children's Service Committee and whomever is the Family and Children's Service Committee thinks it's appropriate to bring to the attention of, and you put it better than I or whoever it would something that would be brought to the attention of as a matter of concern from the University of Assembly. Matter of concern to the University of Assembly.
Does that mean it doesn't meet all the whereas?
I think that's right. Well, except that we want to frame them in such a way that it is and could the University Assembly is concerned with these broader matters.
So it could be with all those whereas.
Right.
Be it therefore resolved that the UA has considered blah, 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 and encourages
the
its committee to bring this to the attention of the addressee.
Right, the committee and whomever the committee finds more appropriate to do so. I mean, could be Mary Hopper. Well, she's not on the committee.
She's accepted the
issue, right. Well, then, okay, then the committee to bring the attention of the
so that's okay, so it would come back to, let's say, the Family Services Committee, and then be distributed with the blessing of the UA.
Yeah,
that sounds good.
Or can't we just, instead of sending it, because we don't have to send every resolution to the president.
No.
Can't we just send it back to that group or that?
We don't send it back, but that's been saying we haven't taken action on it.
Okay, can't we forward it to the Office of Workforce Diversity and Inclusion?
Well, the committee should do that.
Okay.
In our test.
It would just take some of the work off of you. I
would just like to say something on behalf of this. I had lunch with the meeting lady at the pre-game today. And I asked her, are the kids any different than they were? And he said, yes, because of so much electronic media, they're at pre-K, their attention spans are shorter. And she has a hard time getting them to follow the books where you have to have empathy and understand the feelings that are in the stories. And so I like this resolution because it says that computers aren't only good. That
Ready to vote? Oh, I think we need to move this.
I did.
Oh, you did?
Did I?
No. No. Did we?
Also
moved by?
Second.
Second by Leon Lawrence. All in favor?
Yes.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Ten, it's unanimous.
I'm going to abstain. I don't know what your vote is.
10, affirmative. Any opposed? Seeing none. 0 opposed and 1 abstention.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to the next topic, which I hope will be not as long as we've dedicated to it. I wanted to bring up some information on what we discussed in the executive committee about the UA charter and its reworking. And fellow execs, please jump in when you would like. Basically, we had a discussion and we believe that the crux to the charter is we want to understand and basically understand what legislative authority means in our charter. And I have sent an email to Jim Mingle to come and meet with us to have that discussion so we can see where what his thoughts are on what legislative authority is and where he would stand on how that is interpreted thus in the charter, so we know how to proceed, because we feel that that's a crucial or vital point to how we would want to proceed in updating the charter.
Yes, I agree. The fundamental issue is whether the UA is being as effective as it could be in working with these various agencies. And as I reviewed the UA charter the other night,
which I had never looked at before, I must confess. There are a lot of things in there which I rather suspect are not going on. And one of the things I think we ought to talk about, either as a group or as a small group, is whether or not it makes sense for the UA to try and have an influence on it. You know, we have this legislative responsibility for the campus store. Is that still a useful thing to have? United Religious Work, transportation, and I've forgotten some of the others. And it seems to me that this has not actually been happening over the past year to any great extent. And so one of the questions, I think, was to get Jim to kind of explain to us what administrative authority might mean in the context of the charter. And I'm very sorry, but I have to run to another meeting, and it's going to take me 5 minutes to get there.
Kind of piggybacking off what you said, this is kind of the first step. We've talked about charter review every year, running since for at least the past 6 years. The first thing we need to address is what authority and legislative powers we do have and if we should continue those. The second step, which we'll send out after this meeting, is an overview of the background of UA, history of what powers it used to have, and then from there you can analyze. UA is kind of stagnant in the middle of two different options. We can move to more of a representative body, or we can completely separate and become independent of the other assemblies, because right now we really are just a representative body with legislative powers. So after this meeting, that information sheet will go out, and you guys can have a week or 2 weeks to think about where you think UA should go, but definitely the first step is talking to Jim Mingle and seeing where we stand right now.
Any comments?
Yeah, John? I have a question. In the UA charter, I believe it's somewhere in the beginning, this listing the purposes of the UA and so forth, there's reference to the Student Bill of Rights. And I remember I looked last year, I can't even find the Student Bill of Rights anywhere.
Statement
of Student Rights, yes. I can't even find any such document anywhere in Cornell's policies. I feel like this is something that should be addressed in this review. Why do we have authority over this document that apparently doesn't exist? What is it supposed to be? What is it supposed to do?
I know what your rights are.
Yeah, and why do we have the mission statement of student rights? Why is it the UA instead of the some combination of SA and GTSA?
There was a statement of student rights. It's been diffused across several different. Maybe you can give us the history of that and the history that you're preparing of the UA. It's been diffused into privacy and educational rights statements and. Because FERPA came along since then. So I think you need to get history of it. But the statement of student rights, and also the campus code is sort of a very elaborate kind of description of student rights. And that has been elaborated out over the period of time since then, the original charter was developed. So it may be that the statement of student rights needs to be deleted from that policy chart.
Okay. Any other Randy?
Now, during the discussion about the campus code of conduct, there was a lot of discussion about legislative authority and the UA's legislative authority. And Jim Mingle wanted to say, well, the UA can only advise the president the way that he advises the president. And I think we stood up very well to say, no, we have legislative authority. That means we make the laws. The president can reject them, but we make the laws of the things that we have jurisdiction over.
Right.
I don't think we should begin questioning that with Jim Mingle. We should assume that and then explore anything we want.
I want to second that. I I can tell you a personal experience over a period of 2-3 months of sitting with Jim Ingalls, mano a mano, and also in small groups, discussing campus code of conduct, where he said, in fact, oh, no, no, anything you do is at the will, at the behest of the president, in other words, the president. And you can say that you have legislative authority, but it's only that given to you by the president, and the president has a right to. And then we had to argue very strongly, just as Randy has said, that in fact we have the right to propose as legislation. The president has a perfect right to dispose. But that's the process. It's not one that takes away what we have the right to do. And I think the legislative rights, legislative authority has already been well enough defined that we don't need Jim to talk about it at this point. However, when we get to the point of discussing what it is we do with policy, perhaps, or and we see some conflicts that are occurring between the administration, which is apparently making policies without in areas that we have legislative authority over policy without consulting us, I think that's a good point to get Jim here. I mean, what happened today with family and children's, family services. What happened today is a great example of what we're supposed to be doing.
Exactly.
Which is looking at the things that are important in campus and discussing them as policy matters that we then act upon. And I don't think we need to have Jim come in and say to us, well, you know, and which he has a, you know, I mean, he's the advocate for the president and the board of trustees. He's the counsel for the board of trustees as well.
Okay. Do you remember, were you at the leadership breakfast when Jim was there and talked?
Yeah.
Unless I was in a totally different meeting, which I very well could have been. Jim, I got the impression from Jim Mingle that he thought legislative authority was, he was supportive of that. Because somebody had asked him about committees not reporting as they should have within the charter. And he said, well, you need to bring those people to task and get them to do what they need to do.
Not reporting to us, you mean?
Reporting to us and doing what the charter said.
And that they weren't reporting to us.
That they weren't.
Yeah. Well, no matter what, I can say only from my, I was at that meeting, but of course that meeting was discussing other things than what we have authority over. I mean, the first clause of the charter says that we have legislative authority over all those aspects of conduct of the Cornell University now covered by CAPS Code of Conduct. I can tell you, in deliberations having to do with that very issue, Jim made the point, was trying to make the point, that we didn't really have as clear legislative authority over campus conduct until we pushed the issue to citing the charter saying what we could do. And as made our legislation pass it to the president as it says in the charter and so forth. So I guess what I'm saying is in a meeting like that, you may well say something like that, and that's perfectly nice, and we should rely upon it. And then we should go the next step, which is what he suggested.
Right.
That is, hold our respective members.
And that's what we were trying to do.
To do.
Yeah, that's what we were, that was the intent to do.
Pardon me?
That was the intent.
Having him come here to tell us we have
No. He's going to meet with the executive committee.
For what reason?
I wanted him to say that again to us as the executive committee, so then we can then proceed on how to go about revising the charter.
I don't understand the first step. Why we need the first step? I think what we need to do is talk about the very point, which is which committees are we serious about and want to get engaged in? That's all I was saying at the last meeting, which is before we start revising the charter and saying we're going to chop this committee off if nobody pays any attention to it, we should sit down. For example, Family and Services Committee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess it's Bernita is now, you know, engaged with it. And that's a serious, important engagement. You know, sustainability is me, you know, Randy is planning committee. And those are responsibilities that we have. And we can go through the committees and talk about them one at a time in our session.
Okay.
And say, what are we serious about in this body? And what do we want to do about this? As opposed to saying, Jim saying we have the authority. We have the authority. It's in our charter. That's all I have to say.
Okay. You can go first, and then I'll just...
I'd like to offer a suggestion in terms of looking at the charter and in terms of engaging Jim Mingle and in terms of following up like we did last year. So I think the most successful part of the UA has been the campus code and working on that. And I think this might be a good time to follow up and see if our recommendations have been successful or they should be modified. And we can have Mary Beth Grant come in and Jim Mingle come in and a few of the people that were involved in that to listen to whether that was successful and what we could further do. And as a way of checking, is that part of the code, is that part of our charter successful, and is there anything we need to change to?
Okay. Okay. Are we going until 6 or 6:15 today?
6:15, right?
That's what I'm going to do. First, in response to Randy, I would say CJC, I don't think it's a question of if we've been successful with that. That's, I think, a legislative authority that we are granted. That's the inherent one that we do have control over. As we discussed last meeting, when the other assemblies form and we kind of lost our responsibilities, that's the one thing that the UA grab a hold of with the desk group, just to make sure other assemblies didn't take the power. And then in response to why...
What did you just say?
At orientation, different assemblies formed after UA, and they took the responsibilities of the UA with them. As student assemblies formed, they took undergraduate student issues with them and control over campus life and student services. When GPSA formed, they did the same thing with respect to graduate students. The only responsibility that UA managed to hang on to was TJC and review and hearing board. Does that make sense?
What about
legislative authority over other departments?
Also, Gannett is one too.
It's under a different head, so that might be a little.
But actually, operationally, the only one that we have been successfully held on to is TJC.
Well, that's something we have to discuss, that operationally, whether or not we failed in our responsibilities to transportation, to planning, and other committees. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what we have to discuss. We don't have to assume we've got the booty prize of the campus code of conduct when everybody took everything away. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there may be some important role for us in the area of planning and university-wide considerations like planning and transportation that we really should be more vigorously, and that's what I think Charlie was talking about, pursuing and take it seriously and really going at it with as much passion as we did the campus code.
Yeah, I just want to also include Gannett in that because of, I mean, we did have the death of a student. Who knows what's coming next? So there's things that I think we should be doing. And I don't look at those committees. I look at us, the UA membership, like all of, I guess we're all saying the same thing. We have to look at all these different committees and see, you know, where we should be and what we should be doing or not.
But I'm concerned that the campus code committee is, I'm not concerned, I'm just interested in, and I agree actually with Randy, the campus code committee ought to report to us about whether or not it's fulfilling its mission now. And we as a UA ought to have some, you know, critical role in seeing, you know, if it's not, how can it be, you know, made more vigorous.
Okay. Any other comments?
So maybe what we could have is next meeting, we could have a report from campus code of conduct. Code and Judicial Committee a full report about everything it's doing and not doing, and see whether Mollis Rand's estimation, rather than Barry Rett, who actually reports through Kansas Code and Judicial Committee.
Do we want to invite Barry Rett to come?
Sure, you can come.
And invite him to be able to come?
Sure, we could have Ari testify about the problems of filling judicial courts.
Okay.
No, I mean, that's part of our responsibility, part of the Code and Judicial Committee's responsibilities. And if it's not doing them, or if there's a problem, we need to discuss that, because we're not exercising our legislative authority over those policies appropriately. So we need to talk about that. But we also can go through the committee one at a time.
So has the executive committee come up with a plan to look at the charter?
Yeah, we actually had a resolution which brought the table, since we have to be out of this room and have to be cleared out in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. There's another group coming.
There's
out
another group coming at 6:30.
6:30.
Yep.
And it's off to take down the room.
So.
Okay. So. Going, Marty, did you? I will send them more quickly. I was held up with other work.
That's right.
Okay.
So what is the plan to?
I think that everybody should read the charter. That's one thing.
And is there a timeline and whatnot?
Tentative timeline is next week, which hasn't been fully scheduled, was for the exec committee to meet with Jim Dingle. And since it was kind of unclear earlier, the purpose was, today we couldn't even agree specifically what Jim Neville said before, is to get him on the record. What he said, one final thing, what he believed our legislative authority was, and then from there begin to analyze what we believe it should be.
I suggest
that
he actually meets with the whole group.
I mean, if he's going to come in two meetings now that we just scheduled, we can reschedule him for the whole group.
Yeah, I think it'd be good to have come to the whole group. That's my difference. I really wants to have an executive committee meeting, but that's something that I think having an important and have a discussion with the whole group about it is better.
And then the table resolution was for the formation of the ad hoc committee. Right now, 8.5 of our charter, the Assembly System Review Committee, is one of those non-existent committees, and it has... It's a dormant committee, and right now it has 11 members, and the staffing requirements aren't possible, and they're extremely cumbersome. So basically, the ad hoc committee would replace that committee for the time being.
So, is one of our assignments then to read the charter by the next meeting when Jim and everybody is here by the next time we meet, or not?
Yes.
I will invite Jim. I can't guarantee that he'll be here.
Whether he's here or not, is one of our assignments to read the charter.
Not necessarily an assignment. You should have a general understanding of.
No, you should read the charter.
I mean, that's just the same thing. General understanding, reading. Like, as an assembly member in general, you should have a general understanding of the charter.
Okay, can I have a motion to adjourn, please? Who first did? Okay. All in favor?
For adjournment.
And that was your name. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Can I turn this off?
Yeah.
Even though it says it's massive.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.